I spent 7 years in the state capitol, so I know exactly how Madison works. And so for me, when I think about my those experiences and putting them together, this is about how we can form like Voltron in the state legislature and really get things done.
It's Friday, which means it's time for the Political Power Hour on Point Taken, where the left and right go head-to-head on this week's top stories and issues. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride. Should we talk about
the government? Psych! Steve is still not here. He'll be back on Monday, indeed. He is having a great time. He'll be, as I said, he'll be back on Monday, but both Joe and Bill are in the studio today.
Where is he this time?
He's in the Caribbean. I don't know which islands. I knew he went to Jamaica.
How did you get that guy's life? My goodness.
Now, this is our only June appearance together, right?
It is. We better make it a good one.
Better make it a good show.
Your A-game,
yeah,
Bill.
I'm ready.
I honestly, because I had my event last night for Sojourners Be the Light, and I'll be totally honest, I'm moving a little bit slower than usual this morning because of that. It's been a long week. And so there was a part of me this morning. I was like, I wonder if they could just do the show without me today.
Stick a quarter in us and we'll go.
And here we go. All right. So we have plenty to get to. I'm excited to see both of you. Because, yeah, it's been 2 weeks because neither of you were here last week. And
great golf in central Wisconsin.
Good.
Phenomenal. Northern Wisconsin for me.
Yeah.
Also great golf. Great fishing, boating. God, it's... Get
beautiful,
out of Milwaukee,
it's a beautiful
folks.
State. Beautiful yeah. state. All right. I feel like... So now, what are we? 100 and what days into...
142 days to go?
No.
5 months, right? No. 144 on the election. I think she's talking about how long we've been at.
We've been in Iran.
Oh, more and than 100 days.
I know that it's more than 100 days. And I feel like this is probably a bad tell on myself, but in the reading the headlines every day of choosing things to talk about for the show, my eyes are... I've now hit the point where my eyes are glazing over as far as where we are with Iran. And like, I know that there's like, this was a very violent week. And it's like this like Groundhog Day of we're close to a deal, we're close to a deal, close to a deal. And I feel like I probably am not alone here as far as trying to keep up with it. Because it just feels like, well, of course. And like, just like throwing our arms up that we're still there. And so all I know is that this week, President Trump predicted both death and destruction in the morning. And then by the afternoon, he said, we're on the precipice of a deal. And it just feels like we've been here before.
Yeah, we know what the move is now, which is Monday morning before the markets open for the week, the president says a deal is imminent. And then Friday afternoon, after the markets have closed for the week, is when he gets bellicose and threatens a bunch of violence and, you know, so, oh, we're going to take Karg Island. And then by Monday morning, we'll be right back to where we are. I mean, this is nonsense. It's madness. Every time the parameters of a deal leak out, it looks far worse than the Obama deal ever was, because it's like cash considerations, easing of sanctions, and so a payoff. And then it's like, and within 30 days, we'll get that straight opened. And then we'll have a conversation about the highly enriched uranium that's sitting under rubble. So, and then this week, I learned this is not like they pick up the phone or they send a secure fax. They're using couriers to send these negotiating things back and forth. It's not diplomats in a room. This is insanity. And some of us knew that it was going to be insanity from day one. Thank goodness you finally have more Republicans in the Congress. I think it's up to four now, voting to limit the president's authority to conduct this war. At this point, you just got to get out and take a crap deal because the president created a crap sandwich. That's what's on the plate.
Bill?
Well, you can't come every week and say we're close to a deal and then it falls apart. I mean, that looks bad for him. The politics are bad for him as well because, I mean, inflation numbers came out this week. They were higher than expected, not significantly higher, but they're higher nonetheless. And I'm never going to minimize that number because I used it against Biden pretty effectively, I think. And it's a real issue for Republicans running for reelection. Gas prices are a real issue for Republicans running this fall. This war is a real issue. I actually was encouraged when we restarted military strikes this week. I called for that a month ago because I thought it would lead to a conclusion sooner than later. Now, listen, none of us have the facts that the people in the White House do or on the National Intelligence Team do related to all of this. But it just seemed like these guys were never going to – a handshake was never going to be good enough. It was always going to be Charlie Brown and Lucy with the football, and they would keep pulling it away. And I think the president has tried to do this with as little bloodshed as possible, but they don't get that. They just don't get that. What they got this week was when the bombs were flying. All of a sudden, they, you know, all the communication from the Gulf states was, oh, hey, hold on, let's slow this thing down. I would continue that until this ends. I don't see another path to a peaceful resolution of this. I mean, again, if this was the first week where he said we're close to a deal and then a term or two kind of was preventing it from getting done, that'd be one thing. But we're like, this is the seventh or eighth week.
No, this is 37 times in the last 2 months the president has said that the U.S. and Iran were close to ending the war.
Talk about Lucy with the football.
And to Joe's point, I am actually going to agree with him. I think the president has been very good at managing the market, right? The things he says has kept the market high. So anyone who has a 401k, in the last 18 months, you've done better than at any point in your lifetime in your 401k. And the president does get some credit for that. But at the end of the day, this thing has to end or there will be consequences for Republicans in 144 days.
There will be consequences. I think the ship has already sailed on the politics of this. The other complicating factor is I do believe that for about 80 days now, Trump has been desperate to get out of this. The problem is he can't because he's got the wrong partner.
Yeah.
He didn't build a coalition. He, you know, as I described it early on, got dog walked into this thing by Netanyahu, and Netanyahu doesn't want to stop.
He has no interest. He wasn't
even part of the deal this week, right? Apparently.
But that's the problem, because every time Iran and the U.S. are like, okay, let's go back to our corners and live to fight another day, Iran says, but you got to get Israel to stop in Lebanon. And Bibi keeps going.
There's no interest.
So this is a mess. It's a strategic blunder. It is a financial blunder, both for the U.S. Treasury, because this is now costing upwards of $50 billion. It's a catastrophe for the pocketbooks of Americans trying to fill up their tank and go to work every day. This is out of control, and it was all because Trump made a dumb choice.
So as you mentioned, the war powers votes that continue to happen. There's been four Republicans, but what if there continues to be more Republicans who decide to rein him in? What does that actually look like? This is not a man who always does what he's told.
Doesn't
as far
respect
as,
the will of Congress,
yeah, or doesn't respect the limitations on his power. And so, what does that even look like? Even if more Republicans were to say, we gotta stop this.
I don't think there's a straightforward answer to that. I think the simplest way I can describe the complexity of the reality of it is because it's not like if both houses pass, you know, say your war powers are curtailed, it's not like a magic wand has been
snapped. Yeah, we can't
snapped,
just like, get out of there.
It's suddenly gone the next day. But we are now seeing Trump at his weakest politically and in terms of his relationships with Congress on other national security issues. Right. So he tries to get this hack Pulte to be the new director of national intelligence. And Congress actually finds a spine and pushes back and goes, no friggin' way. Like, this guy is not qualified. He's
zero
not
chance.
Serious.
Yeah.
And we're going to use our leverage with the Pfizer.
And Congress won on that.
He
nominated someone else yesterday.
But every time Trump shows more weakness and his standing goes further down, it makes everything else harder for him with the Hill, like a potential reconciliation 3.0. They finally got 2.0 done, which we could talk about. But you know, that took a hell of a lot longer than they thought it was going to. And that's in part because Trump keeps messing up the politics of Capitol Hill.
All right, let's take a break and come back and talk about reconciliation 3.0. But also the fact that ICE now has a lot more funding. All right, Bill McCashin, Joe Zepecki, I am Kristen Bry, and this is Point Taken. Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. Steve will be back on Monday. It is Friday, so Bill McCashin and Joe Zepecki are in studio.
You do sound a little tired.
It's been a long week. You know, I'm holding this whole show together. Steve's on his fifth vacation of the year.
Plus, Albach. There's so much energy. Just keeping up with that. God, did you see their pre-tweet yesterday or 2 days ago when he was on the show? Oh, my God.
Todd came and fired up yesterday.
Todd came and fired up. It was his Festivus day. Yeah.
Actually, he used that word.
Yeah, I know he did.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Okay, so President Trump Wednesday endorsed a third $350 billion reconciliation bill and is urging Congress to immediately pass it and also pass the SAVE Act with it. And so it doesn't sound like this is necessarily has the support needed, though, because Thune has said multiple times that he does not think that they have the votes for the SAVE Act. And so where does this actually go? And is there an opportunity to separate the two so that the, because part of this is also how much of our reserves we've spent on this Iran war, right? As far as a lot of our warheads and everything. And so does he have the votes?
They have a procedural problem. Thune does not have the votes. Well, the parliamentarian will rule the SAVE Act portion of it to be non-germane, which means it can't be part of the package. Is it an interpretation that could be different if there was a different parliamentarian? For those that follow the White House closely, you might remember that the president's been calling for Thune to fire the parliamentarian for the last several weeks. I don't know that you're going to automatically get a different interpretation. You might.
Let's chop up the interpretation quick. My understanding of the rule is that it has to have a fiscal impact on the budget to qualify for reconciliation.
Right.
How in the world do you reinterpret or spin changes to the voting process is a budget issue?
So the way to do it would be to put money in for more vote counters in California, for example.
Do you think that would unlock the whole thing about IDs and women who have changed their names?
As long as there's a fiscal connection to it. I don't think they're thinking hard enough about that. There's always a workaround if you put a little time and effort into it. But that so far has not presented itself. So do they have the votes? Was your KB's question? No, not yet. I mean, this Congress is worn out. They haven't done a ton, but they're worn out and a little hacked off, and they'd like the August recess to start earlier, frankly, I think.
Joe?
Trump, again, has created a problem by himself where if you are John Cornyn, if you are Tom Tillis, if you are, who's the Louisiana guy?
Cassidy.
If you're Bill Cassidy, why the hell do you want to do anything for this guy? Who went to the mattresses?
Or Nancy Mace yesterday? She said she's going to burn the whole place down. Yeah. Did you see that?
We're going to get to fifth place Mace.
Unstable.
So that's three, and it's currently 53 Republicans. So I guess they still could have JD Vance
break the tie. Took a good whack at Murkowski from the Oval yesterday.
Collins has a political fight.
He endorsed her this week.
But he's got a political. She's got a political fight on her hands. And McConnell, I think, is just waiting to twist one final knife before he goes. So the math is not math.
That's what I'm going to say. Like, so what, because even with the ICE funding that did get passed, it was passed 2014 to 2012. So we're still seeing razor thin margins in the House, let alone having, what was that, six?
Five
pissed off ish Republicans in the Senate.
Well, remember the whole budget shutdown was Democrats demanding, different reforms to ICE, and they got none of those. So ultimately, this was a win for Republicans to get that across the goal line, but it shouldn't have been that hard. That's for sure.
And as you said, Democrats won that shutdown fight because they made Republicans take the vote. They separated it out. I thought you said that.
Oh, I didn't say the Democrats won. I think the Republicans ultimately won it because Democrats didn't get any of the reforms that they were seeking. They could have. They could have gotten some of them, and they overplayed their hand.
What do we make of the fact that they now have ICE for an annual budget now has more money than they need for the rest of President Trump's term? Is this really necessary?
No, it's not. Maybe.
I mean, there continues to be national polls. Marquette would be just one, their national poll this month, but there are two others this month that show that a majority of voters nationwide still want all illegals to be, people who are here illegally, whether they're criminal or not, to be deported. 56-44. So that hasn't changed. That might have been the number one reason Trump got reelected, or if it wasn't number one and the economy was, then it was number two. So I think you will continue to see deportations, but they'll be done in a different way. I think Mark Wayne Mullen has done fairly well. I mean, we're not storming cities like we did in Minneapolis, which was, overkill for sure. And I think him and Holman have figured out how to do this sort of more in a more measured way, and I think ultimately that's going to continue.
I mean, I was just going to say, it does feel like we, for where we started in the beginning of the year versus where we are now, it's certainly not in...
It's not front page every day.
It's not front page every day, and I'm sure that ICE is still around and people are still getting deported. I actually have no idea what the numbers have been, like what is going on with Alligator Alcatraz or whatever, all these different detention centers that were being built. Is like that what all this money is still going towards? Are we going to see another surge?
Well,
or is it just being done in a more covert way in order to not piss people off?
Why isn't Stephen Miller doing his daily body count anymore? Like as if this were Vietnam and that's how you measure success. Here's my hot take on this. What every Republican in Congress just signed off on is another boondoggle of corruption for billionaires. You literally cannot spend the pile of money that they just got on hiring more agents, on surging agents into communities, on better training. You can't do it. It's too much money. They are going to be open for business and given no bid contracts and build in these detention facilities that will never have a single person in them. It is going to be corrupt as hell, just like the rest of this administration has been, because they and their buddies are getting rich while everybody else is paying more at the pump. And that's like, I think it will take 10 years to untangle the corruption that is going to come out of just that $70 billion alone. Maybe we can get, you know, son of Elon Musk or a Doge 2.0 on that, because that's what's going to happen.
All right, let's take a break. Joe Zepecki, hot takes. Bill McCashin, I'm Kristen Bryan. This is Point Taken. Welcome back. We only have about a minute. Do either of you have any wrap-up thoughts with... Because when we come back, we're going to talk about Graham Platner, which I'm sure everyone's going to have a lot of feelings about, and any takeaways from Tuesday's primaries. But we have 45 seconds.
Let's talk about fifth place Mace.
Okay. Yeah.
Nancy Mace, fifth place, sold her soul and went all in on Sharia law will never reign in South Carolina for a fifth place finish. I hope she is able to exit Congress in a few months and work on herself and get the help that she needs.
Genuinely. What does she do next?
Podcast
or.
I mean, would she have an audience for that, though? Yeah. Like, well, is she popular enough to...
On some shows, she may be the anti-Trump person, right? Whether it's MS Now or CNN, but...
MS Now is not hiring her.
Listen, I just want to repeat this for the listeners before the segment ends. I have never been a fan of hers. I have been critical of her. I think she's wildly unstable. There's something clearly wrong with her. Time to go.
Time to go. All right. Welcome back. Oh, man, I haven't heard this song in a minute. Throwback to... Oh, they can't hear it.
I can't hear it. I can't hear anything.
All right, well...
We'll get to that later.
We'll get to that later. All right. Graham Platner. Do we have thoughts? I'm imagining that we do. And so, as you probably know, because we talked about it... I talked about it with Jake Curtis. Graham Platner won in the main Democratic primary for Senate on Tuesday by 50 points. There was not that much of a protest vote, I don't think, as far as for Janet Mills, or I forgot who the third option was on the Democratic ticket. And it presents a very interesting character question as far as where I think it is.
Where did you come down on it? Where do you come down on it?
What I keep coming back to, and Steve and I talked about this a while ago, and like I think I am very happy I do not have to vote in the main election. Like, I am not a Maine voter, and this is ultimately a Maine election, right? Like, I was reading some interesting testimony, but like people who are Maine voters who were talking about the fact, like how weird it feels to be inside of a national smear campaign. And what I think is really interesting about Maine is because it's so small and because of the groundwork Graham Platner has put in, I mean, he has probably shaken hands with potentially half of the electorate already. And so there is something to be said is when you look someone in the eye and you have a conversation with them in person and you feel like you know them versus reading about someone. And I still think he has a chance to win this, even though for all of us who for all of us who are watching this from the outside and seeing the list of things that feel like strikes against him. But I think the work that he has done and how people feel about him, I still think this is going to be a really close race. And I also think it's just inside of a two-party system, when you get wildly imperfect candidates who have backgrounds and track records, you ask people to whether they feel like they're holding their nose and they vote anyways. Because, like, you know, when Jake was here on Wednesday, he listed off all the things for Graham Plattner. I was like, are you really going to look at me with a straight face and say that you didn't vote for Donald Trump? And he tried, you know, and to his credit, he's like, well, in the primary, I supported Ron DeSantis or I supported Ted Cruz. I was like, but yeah, who'd you vote for in the general? And that's the thing. This is the question that we get for, we as voters, we get put in the position to make these choices of, like, do we vote for the people who are going to vote for the policies that we want, despite whatever their background is? Or we vote for character?
We don't vote for character.
Anymore. For sure.
Yeah, I heard you're in, I'm going to challenge one of your points. So Janet Mills got 58,000 votes on Tuesday, which may not seem like a lot in a statewide election, except for Maine only has 1 million people. One. Two, Susan Collins won by 78,000 votes 6 years ago. So it actually could be enough to be the difference in the race if those people decide not to go for Plattner. Listen, we have replaced imperfections for power. If it's your guy, you're going to be with him, warts and all, or her. If it's your, you know, you just don't, the imperfections aren't disqualifying like they were not that long ago. Now, the one thing I would say about this particular race, they've hit Plattner pretty hard already, and he's survived that. I was in D.C. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It appears the best opposition research on him will not come out until after they could replace him on the ballot, which is the second Tuesday of July. It's not actually the primary. They can still replace him up till the second Tuesday in July. If there are penis pics of him that he sent to young women, he's done. That's a bridge too far for anybody.
It's a pretty big if. That's a hell of a...
It's also very specific.
Yeah.
Do you know something?
We'll see.
So I've been thinking a lot about this. Because in my own household, we have different opinions about this. And for me, it boils down to this. I've never heard Donald Trump apologize for the way he treated women and pledge to be better. I've never heard Ken Paxton say that he flew too close to the sun in how he handled public monies and he would be better. But I have already heard Graham Plattner say, I screwed up. I was messed up from war. I came back and I did a lot of stupid things and I have worked on myself and I pledge to be better and I am trying to be better and become the man I want to be every single day. That to me is a hell of a lot better vessel for our politics than people who believe they can do no wrong, because none of us are perfect, right? We all fall down. And when you look at the squishy valedictorian type A 1600 SAT perfect little prince and princesses who have been running Washington DC for the last 100 years, I think people look at that and go, I don't know, maybe it's time for somebody with some warts who at least is honest enough with me to go like, yeah, I screwed up. I was a bad guy, but I worked on it. I got better, and I want to take what I've learned and experienced to Washington and represent you. That to me is more compelling than Ken Paxton's best defense for his own foibles is apparently dressing up James Tallarico in a dress with AI and trying to win his campaign that way. I'll ride with Graham Plattner, an imperfect person trying to be better, based on the things I know about today, not based on speculation from you.
The real problem he has, in addition to the imperfections, which he may get over, is Susan Collins is a very strong candidate. Mm-hmm. She was losing on every single poll leading up to her last election 6 years ago by as much as 12 points. She won by 8. That's a 20-point swing. Means the polling didn't capture what was actually going on the ground. One. Two, she's the appropriations chairperson. She can bring home hundreds of millions of dollars to Maine. And I think Mainers get that. And so I don't think and she's the most bipartisan member of the Senate. I mean, I don't think Mainers are going to replace her with this, you know, imperfect guy for nothing. I think he's got a bigger hill to climb than most Democrats give him credit for.
I think it's still a huge... I'm not saying it's a cakewalk. I just think it's interesting. It's just the psychology behind it. And I was kept thinking of, as you were talking, Joe, and you and Bill and I were talking about before the show, of this like rise of Hunter Biden on Twitter.
It's amazing.
Right? And there is something, I think, in the zeitgeist or the ethos of people yearning for people to own their mistakes. Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons why people are like, why do I like Hunter Biden all of a sudden?
It's a critical formula. Joe pointed it out.
And it's because he's owning, I have done all of the things you, there's nothing you can do to hurt me because I've already done enough to hurt myself.
If it's not the first rule of politics, it's the second rule. If you make a mistake, you better own it.
Yeah.
And if you don't, it's going to come back to bite you.
But that hasn't for Trump. He's never apologized, right?
It hasn't. For some reason, it hasn't affected Trump. That is correct.
I would argue it is now. The other thing that's changed in the Senate is I think the conventional wisdom has changed, and Maine is no longer essential for Democrats. I sent you that Ohio Senate poll last night. The Alaska, the story keeps getting worse for Republicans there because now there's another Dan Sullivan on the ballot.
He got kicked off last night.
Oh, I thought they said he could continue.
No, okay. He's off.
But right, but Peltola is a great recruit.
For sure. So at the best.
Maine is no longer essential to Democrats winning back the Senate. And that may impact the way that some people, you know,
as Democrats get their hopes up about Ohio, Sherrod Brown is trying to make a comeback. Let me just say the last United States senator who lost and then won a different Senate seat in the same state was Slate Gordon in 1988. So it's been almost 40 years.
It's been a minute.
It's been a minute.
All right, let's take a break. This is Point Taken. Welcome back to Point Taken. We're here with Bill McCosh and Joe Zepecki on the Political Power hour and a half. Before we move on to Wisconsin news and governor's race and if we can see another deal, any closing thoughts? Because I know, Bill, before the show, you tweeted out maps and races that we're looking at and the race to 218. And so final thoughts on interesting races to watch as primaries continue to happen.
The maps have finally shooken out for this cycle. And I think it's important to say for this cycle because there will be more redistricting between now and 2028, potentially even including Wisconsin. Republicans are now in the lead to maintain Congress, but they are not at 218. But on the three major indicators, Cook Political Report, Inside Elections, and I forget the name of the third one, Republicans range from 212 to 216, which, you know, 6 months ago would have been unheard of. So anything's possible, but they still need the right global environment. And that means no war in Iran. And it means gas prices closer to $3. They don't have to be three. If they are, that's phenomenal. But there has to be a noticeable decrease in gas prices.
So ultimately, how many races are we actually looking at in the House that are going to be competitive?
12 to 18, maybe 20 on the top.
You think more than that?
Give me the over. We've seen another domino fall. More will. This week, American Bridge, one of the Democratic groups, is doing what I have been advocating for months. They're saying, I see your conventional wisdom, 20, you know, top 20 House races. And they said, screw it. We got 50 million. We're going into the next 12. And what you're going to see between now and Labor Day is probably one more round, maybe two more rounds, where the playing field expands.
Yeah.
More, you know, the NRCC and the DCCC will do more polling. They are going to find districts all over this great nation where Democrats are in races or ahead in races that 6 months ago never seemed conceivable. There's going to be a rash of polling on these new Texas districts, and they're going to go, oh, crap, maybe this was a dummy mander. So by Labor Day, the playing field will be even bigger, and then it just becomes a question of how much defense Republicans have to play. Do they have to start doing things like doing to Derek Van Orden what Democrats did to Brad Paff in 2022 and saying, sorry, buddy, we got to cut you loose.
You're on your own.
You can't win. You're on your own. We got to go protect a R plus 10 district. That is how I see the next few months shaping up.
We'll see.
We'll see. Actually, Jazz, mark that so we can come back to it at Labor Day and see how right Joe was or was not. All right, when we come back, I haven't read anything about this, but it seems like Bill might have some inside knowledge that this budget deal in Wisconsin may not be dead. Stay with us. All right.
Never record between commercials.
Never put makeup on during the break. What just happened?
I looked at myself. I put lip gloss on because I looked at myself in the camera and I go, I look really washed out. So I put a little color on my lips. So, all right. Bill, what do you know about a potential, what did you call it? A son of the budget deal?
Son of the budget deal, tax deal. So,
son of a B.
Son of a B, right? I might have been with a couple of the GOP leaders in the last week or so in Southeast Wisconsin, and there are still discussions between at least Assembly Republicans and Governor Evers. They would both like to see this get done. We saw late last week that Devin Lemieux concurred and said, hey, if two of the 18 senators who voted no come forward and say we're going to switch our vote, we'll come back.
With no changes. Same bill, just we got
the question,
we whipped the votes.
Right? With no changes, you would can only conclude that two Republicans would change their mind and come back. A Democrat might be able to ask for something and potentially get it to change their vote. So that's the thing to watch. From a GOP standpoint, you want to vote on this bill because you've got Jeff Smith and Robin Vining on the wrong side of this bill, which can be used against both of them. If Jeff Smith is one of the people that come back and say, well, I want something for the HeartWorks facility in Eau Claire that is going to replace two hospitals, he might get it. And then he'll be on the right side of the bill. So there's politics involved. But the point for the listeners is, don't count out that tax rebate just yet. The at least two out of the three powers that be are still working on it pretty hard.
Joe, what do you put the likelihood at?
I'm not holding my breath.
Why?
Because I think as the political environment continues to be what it is or get worse for Republicans, more Democrats are thinking ahead about how much more flexibility they have in the budget negotiations for the next biennium with that surplus sitting there.
How much, because we have about a minute and a half, how much do you think they're counting their, what is it? Counting their chicken, their eggs before the
chickens
whatever.
Before they hatch.
Yeah, that, with that thing. Because we were having a conversation this week about DPI and Act 20 money, and no one said it out loud, but it's hard to think that maybe one of the reasons they're sitting on it is, again, if like this promise of a trifecta, and how much do you think that is the smart move of holding on to money, holding on to what can be done if Democrats get a trifecta versus trying to get something done now?
I don't know, but I know this. One budget will not fix the 15 years of Republican rule or the 30 to 40 years since Wisconsin's school funding formula got broken. And so what I would advise my Democratic friends is, even as you are planning ahead and looking ahead, start understanding now this is not a one budget fix, and don't overpromise because you're setting yourself up to underdeliver.
So there's two parts of it, right? There's the budget deal itself, which was the right vote was yes. And Robin Vining and Jeff Smith are on the wrong side of that vote. However, both of them are likely to be in the legislature next year. They're both running, Smith for re-election, Vining for the Senate seat. And they're also jockeying for positions, potentially being on the Joint Finance Committee, potentially being a committee chair of an important committee. And Dianne Hesselbein, the minority leader, wanted a no. So ultimately, she got the no she wanted from the people she wanted it. But you will never get punished by your voters if you support a bipartisan deal, particularly if it's the one that your governor initiated. So I think they both made a mistake. We'll see if it ends up costing them.
All right. Well, there is a new poll out for the governor's race for the Democrats. So we will talk about that on the other side of the news.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Braun.
Welcome back. Bill McCosh and Joe Zepecki here for one more half hour. And then actually, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley is going to be in studio. I should have said that earlier. We're going to be talking about county stuff, Les. Might ask him a couple questions about the campaign, mostly county stuff.
In his favor, only one of our candidates for governor on the Dem side who has met Barry the Wonder Dog.
Really? How big is Barry right now?
He's approaching 70 pounds at about 7.5 months. He's doing great. But we took him to one campaign event because Crowley was right around the corner in Shorewood, and they got to say hello.
Sweet dog. All right. Talking about the governor's race, though, there was a new, should we call it a leaked poll? Is that basically how we're talking about it?
A strategically leaked poll
that was part of the Rodriguez campaign that shows Barnes in the lead, but had come down from where he was earlier this year. Then Hong, then Rodriguez, and everyone else basically polling less than 5%.
Right.
We now know they've all made the, at least the seven main candidates have made the ballot. Because I asked Bill, I was
anybody
like,
not make the ballot?
Kirk Bankstead.
So strange. He may be trying to challenge that, but he'll lose.
Who could have seen that coming?
Right.
Weird.
Might have even tweeted about that.
God, that's, he's already gotten too much airtime. Let's move on. All right. So with that, we also have the Democratic WSDEMS convention is this weekend. There will be a straw poll. I don't know how much that will tell us or not tell us. But what are you? I will start with Joe since this is
my
your
account.
Party. what are you making as far as we are seeing some ads? I think. I mean, Joel Brennan came out with an ad, but like, there still doesn't, like, this is the thing. So you probably, I think you missed Todd's rant yesterday. But it's just feeling like, when do ballots go out for early 26th. Voting? The 26th. And so it still just feels slow. Yeah. And it does not feel like there is a lot of momentum. But no matter what, we're going to get a candidate out of this primary. And so what tea leaves are you reading right now?
I think every day that the dynamics don't change is a good day for the front runner, who I've told you guys from day one is Mandela Barnes. And until there was a real poll, not the way that Charles Franklin did it, I know that's a real poll overall, but it's not the way you poll a primary.
And tell people why.
Because in this poll that came out from the Rodriguez campaign, they are polling Democratic primary voters.
And that's a screener up front.
Right. And that's so you know that.
Yeah.
As opposed to doing a statewide poll, and then within that poll of Republicans and independents and Democrats trying to then figure out of the third of it, which are Democrats or some independents, then trying to figure out who's going to actually vote in a primary. That's not how you do it. It's not how it works. So we don't need to talk about how right I am all the time. It's okay.
And now we see the
I've been saying somebody has to change the dynamics of this race or the front runner wins. And
we have been saying.
And in the 21st century, there has never been a Dem primary for governor where anybody other than the front runner has won it.
Right.
And Joel Brennan is the latest this week to say he's going on TV. Great ad. The kids look great. Joel and his wife look great. It's a good message. But there's not a lot of weight behind that ad. Right. Decision one, go up. Decision two, make people see your content and your message. And on the second part, I'm not sure the weight is what probably his campaign wants it to be, what anybody who is supporting Joel wants it to be. And so it's not, to me, a dynamic game changer, but at least it's something. And so in the coming weeks, we got to figure out who the hell is going to try to change the dynamics of this race.
What would it take to change the dynamics of this race? Is it just more money? Is it more ads? Is it a story?
Somebody
coming out?
Frontally going at by name saying you should not vote for the front runner because of X, Y, or Z. I don't know what that would be. But if Sarah or Fran, who are sort of in second and third in this poll, in a frontal way took on Barnes, that could potentially change the dynamics. But tie goes to the front runner, boring goes to the front runner, and that's where we are.
I think what Rodriguez accomplished heading into the Dem convention is she minimized four of the candidates. Anyone 5% or below, their race is over for all intents and purposes. The math doesn't work. There's only 18% who are undecided in that poll. So 18 plus 5, if you're David Crowley, doesn't get you past Mandela Barnes without something else occurring. So I think what she was trying to do is create a dividing line where there's only three who are legitimately still in the race, Barnes being at the top, Hong being number two, and her being number three. Plus, I think she wants there to be a coalescing of the other moderate groups in the Democratic primary saying, oh my God, we can't have Fran Hong because she might lose the general. Same with Barnes. Don't forget, Barnes lost a winnable race in 2022 against Ron Johnson. So Will there be a backroom deal where Democrats say, we got to load up on Sarah Rodriguez? I don't know the answer to that. It's just as likely that they say, well, heck, we might as well try Barnes again, right? Because at least he came within a half a point of Johnson. He doesn't have all of the extreme positions that Hong has. So we'll see. There's a possibility this poll will actually work for Barnes. But the one thing I will tell you about the poll, it shows that Barnes' support has declined since March. He's minus 8 since March. Hong has gone up 8 since March. Rodriguez has only gone up 4. It actually demonstrates what Joe and I have been saying, that Hong has run the best campaign. She's got the most compelling message for Democrat primary voters. She's connecting with them. And honestly, $7,500 or donors, whether they gave her $10 or $20, doesn't matter. They are now personally invested in her campaign, and they're going to do what they need to do to help her over the next 60 days. So Hong's in a pretty strong position here.
Well, and that's what so as you said, there's calling a spade, there's fear, right? There's a certain fear of more moderate Democrats as far as what a Francesca Hong general could look like, right? And so, but there is also, I think, the people who really believe in her.
Yeah.
And you look at populist campaigns like Graham Platner, and you look at some of this, like the way her ability to communicate and her way to actually connect to people when she's talking to you face to face. And I think there's a lot of people who also make the argument that she is the most exciting. And is there not something with that? So do you think that in a backroom deal of any sort, the fear will overcome and they would try to take her out? Or do you think there's anyone who's actually buying into the potential of what a Hong governor could be?
I just you both now referenced the idea of backroom Democrats and making deals. They've never been smoke filled. They're certainly not today.
Well, let's be fair though. In 2022, 2 weeks before the
backroom deal. That was three other candidates looking at the numbers and going, "I can't win," and trying to save face by getting out of the way. That's very different. That's self preservation.
So when does that happen here?
So when does that happen here though?
Any week now. Also, I don't know. I think some of these people are in it, you know, come hell or high water. And if they were going to get out, the time to get out would have been before putting their name on the
100%. But now that they're in, they're all going to stay in until that debate on July 28th. Why? If you put your name on a ballot and go through this for 9 or 10 or 12 months, you want to be on that stage.
Yeah.
You want your one shot. It will change nothing for the bottom four here. Nothing.
You only get one shot. Do not let your opportunity go.
Hamilton. All right. When we come back, say something nice. You guys are going to be surprised, I think, with what mine is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You keep saying your side is better. It's time to
say something nice
about the other side of the political aisle on Point Taken.
Come on, people now. Smile on your brother.
All right, Joseph Pecky, Bill McCaution, who would like to go first?
You've been teasing your...
No, I'm going last.
All right, I'll go first. My say something nice this week is former Minnesota congressman, former presidential candidate, Dean Phillips. And it has to do with the California elections. He doesn't specify whether he's talking about the mayoral election or the statewide. It could be either. It could be both. He posted this week on X, let's just count mail-in ballots received by Election Day and end this nonsense. He couldn't be more right. The Supreme Court might actually help him on this. There's a case related to the state of Mississippi that's before the Supreme Court that I thought we might even have a decision today, but we will by next Friday, that will make sure that Election Day is Election Day and you don't get to count votes for 2, 3, or 4 weeks or 36 days after an election. California is an abomination. It needs to end. It destroys the legitimacy of the elections and the people who voted in them.
I can't wait to talk with Jake next week about the Republican conspiracy theories in California, which do not make any sense whatsoever. Because of that, I had a really hard time this week. The commitment to the bit by Republicans drives me crazy. So I'm just going to say to Republican Senator Eric Schmidt of Missouri, hell of a catch, man.
Okay.
Put it
in the newsletter. The link.
Send me the link.
Catch by Republican Senator Eric Schmidt playing left field.
Bloodied his nose, bloodied his elbows.
What a What a play.
Made top
play of the day.
ESPN top 10.
Should have been play of the day.
50 years old.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Great job, Senator.
All right. Yeah. Send me the link so I can put in the newsletter. Mine is former Governor Scott Walker.
What?
He agreed to sit down for an interview for the documentary. And we wanted, obviously, because he's working with young people at the Young American Foundation. And obviously, I think when people point to polarization in Wisconsin, he didn't necessarily own that in the interview as far as but he does. He knows it. And, you know, this is someone who absolutely did not have to sit down with me. Right. Like, it's a documentary. Who knows where it's going to happen with him. But thanks to Brian Reisinger, who set up the introduction, and we did it at the Milwaukee Athletic Club. And he was very kind, very cordial. We had a great conversation. Probably still don't agree on a whole lot, but, you know, he did not have to do it, and he did. And so my Say Something Nice is for Scott Walker.
Very good.
I did surprise both of you.
Very good.
Yes, you did.
All right, grab bag when we come back.
All right. Since we got most of the politics out of our systems, let's finish up with some grab bags.
All right. Who's going first, Joe or Bill?
I'll go first. So this is a shout out to my granddaughter, Carlin, who will graduate from Brookfield East on Sunday. We're looking forward to that. Carlin will be a freshman at UW-Madison this fall. She's going to study forensic nursing, sort of like CSI kind of stuff. So she'll be the one in the courtroom. pretty cool. Listen, my son is a single parent and raised her right. She's spectacular. I mentioned this on the air a couple weeks ago when I got to come over and we had a buddy day. When my son was in college, she lived with us and she's like our fourth kid. And we had a lot of buddy days when she was little, and we still call it that now. So congratulations, Carlin, on a great run at Brookfield East. And we look forward to seeing you even more now that you're going to be in Madison.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Get your laundry
That's
done.
Awesome. Good luck to her.
Yeah. Come over for Sunday night dinner.
Sorry to really change the vibe, but I do think it's worth noting that this week, the war between Russia and Ukraine surpassed the length of World War I.
Wow.
It is 1,569 days, 4 years, and 3 months. Slava Ukraine, they are having some success on the battlefield. Drive the intruders back, the invaders, and Godspeed to everyone in Ukraine. And I also want to give a nice shout out to a gentleman named Greg, working the late shift at Marcus North Shore Cinema last night. There was a little bit of a technical difficulty in the movie I was seeing, which was Steven Spielberg's new one, Disclosure Day. And Greg, not Greg Marcus, but Greg working at Marcus Theaters could not have been kinder and more helpful. And thank you, sir. Greatly appreciate it.
All right. Mine is last night for Be the Light, Sojourner Family Peace Center's annual gala. We raised, as of right now, there's still some gifts coming in, but as of right now, we raised $480,000 last night.
Nice.
And
how much?
$480,000.
Was there any liquor there?
There was. There was an open bar. It was the first time I've ever co-chaired anything. I am so proud to be part of that organization.
That's awesome.
And lend whatever I can as far as my network, my platform to the work that they do. And the speaker, the survivor last night who spoke, It is an issue that never ceases to amaze me as far as this is domestic violence does not know class. It does not know race. It does not know gender. And it is something as far as the people's right to be safe and the shame that comes when you're not and what it takes to have a community around you to feel brave enough to try to get the help that you need or your kids need. So it just is a huge shout out to that organization. And I'm going to try to get through this part without crying. My parents came. They came to town, and so my dad ended up coming, but my poor mom got food poisoning last night, so she couldn't come.
No.
But my dad did get to be there. My brother was there, and I think as I was driving to work today, I was reflecting on who my parents were in Madison, and, you know, my dad started the Boys and Girls Club in Madison and all the different volunteering work that they did as a couple, as individuals, and there was something very full circle about getting to have them there, even my mom in spirit. Of like just how they raised me, right? And so the fact that like what you do to give back to your community and the ways that you show up. And so that was very cool.
Speaking of the Boys and Girls Club, we should probably also note the passing suddenly and very tragically of Michael Johnson. What an incredible force for good in his community.
Yep.
Just a light of, you know, the leadership class in Madison. Yeah.
Really?
Enormous
suddenly.
Shoes to fill. Yeah.
Absolutely. So yeah, now we have a minute.
How was the text line today?
It was good.
I hope we gave the people what they wanted, given that Bill will be on assignment the next couple of weeks.
2 more weeks, yeah. Well, we're going to Italy.
We're
going
to try to do a podcast the week of the 4th of July.
Right.
So we can both go blue. We can talk about what this country means to us.
Yeah.
And what we're thinking about as the nation approaches 250.
Put it into the universe. We will do it. We're not going to try. We will.
When I get back, we'll all be here, all four, I think, a couple times. And by then, we will have a new Marquette poll. We'll have finance reports for the gubernatorial campaign.
Not by July 9th. It'll be the next week, and I'm gone that week.
He's gone July 10th, so.
It'll be a while then.
Yeah.
A month-ish.
60 summer's days hard, if you're counting to the primary.
Summer's hard to get everyone's schedules to align.
144 to the general.
But I will say, we definitely hear it on the text line when you guys aren't here. So this is by far our most, as good as Steve and I are together, this is by far our most popular show of the week every week. So good on you.
We love the people back.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Even when they don't like us.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thank you as always. Very fun show. Thanks for keeping me on my toes on this slow Friday. And absolutely. When we come back after the news, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley is here in the flesh. Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. We got one more half hour until the weekend is here. Steve will be back on Monday. And joining me now in studio is Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, here to talk county stuff. Not the easiest topics either, I might find you. And
not
I asked you, I said I was been joking all show that I've been tired, but you, I am sure, are very tired.
I am, you know, juggling all the things I got going on. But as I always say, I bring my own weather wherever I go.
There
so
you go. That's a good way to live.
Every day's a good day.
All right. So there's been some federal agents who have been investigating an election that happened 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And so we've get us up to speed as far as what do we think they're looking for? And how many people have they actually interviewed so far that were election workers?
Yeah. So let's go all the way back to 2020. So, you know, we had an individual here in the state of Wisconsin that filed about 14 different frivolous lawsuits against Milwaukee County related to the 2020 election. And so 13 of those lawsuits have been thrown out, but one has been constantly delayed and we have not been able to get it thrown out. And so because of that particular lawsuit, we have been forced in a sense, to basically keep the absentee ballots, but also the ballot book, right? The poll book, which can actually, if they get their hands on this, right, they'll be able to actually see who filed an absentee ballot because it has a number on it, and then compare that to the poll book to see exactly who voted. And so we've been constantly fighting back. As of right now, we've had, you know, and more, I want to be very clear, Milwaukee County is willing to participate in any type of investigation. But this does not look like a good faith investigation because no one has contacted our officials. We have seen FBI agents going to the private residence of our election commission director to try to basically try to interview her.
Who didn't hold that job.
Who did not hold that job.
In 2020.
No, they did not. And so we know that they have interviewed some Milwaukee police officers and things of that nature. But as of right now, we have not been contacted. But we have been internally, we've been meeting like constantly. We've partnered with a nonprofit organization called the Democracy Defenders to make sure that we're not only protecting our employees, but continuing to fight in court about the fact that none of this should be happening right now. And so, you know, when I look at this, Kristen, it reminds me of remember the movie with Tom Cruise, The Minority Report, where, you know,
it's a throwback
movie, right? But in a sense, you're basically saying that, well, there's fraud, but we don't know if there's fraud. And it's just like, well, if there's no evidence, how in the world are you saying that we need to do an investigation to say that there is fraud, right? And so if we should be looking at anything, right, I think the president should be looking in the mirror related to the types of fraud that many of us have seen in the public. But we're going to continue to fight. We're going to continue to protect people's rights to vote and our sacred ability to keep our ballots private.
Have you talked to any of the people who've been interviewed by FBI agents?
I have not.
Okay.
I have not. I know that our Milwaukee County officials have not had an interview specifically with the FBI agents as of right now. But at the end of the day, you can contact us. You can call us. We're willing to participate with any investigation. We just want to see this being a really good effort and not just trying to continue to spew these conspiracy theories that we don't have fair and safe elections here in the state of Wisconsin.
So what are the different options of how this could end up as far as is it just going to keep going until, like, because that's just the thing. It seems like there's a lot of, like, I don't know if secrecy is the right word, but like you said, it's like, we don't really know what they're getting asked, when they're getting interviewed. Do we know what they're looking for? There's this risk of some people's ballots being public of how they ended up voting, which obviously no one wants that. And so, like, what are the different ways that this could end up?
Well, one, this frivolous lawsuit that we've had against us, you know, from this guy who doesn't live in Milwaukee County, we need that thrown out. You know, that would start the process of giving us the ability.
And whose court is that in right now?
That is in a Milwaukee County court.
Okay.
I forget the, I think it's in Judge Yamashiro's courtroom. And so if that case is thrown out, that will provide the process, give us the ability to start destroying these ballots moving forward. But if they decide that they're going to seize these ballots, then I look forward to seeing the Trump administration in court.
Okay. Then there's pushback from the next leader from the Wisconsin Elections Commission saying that he doesn't think you or Josh Call are doing enough.
What is there for us to do when this is in the court systems, right? And it's, you know, we're talking about the head of the Wisconsin Election Commission. What are they doing, right, to actually stave off these frivolous lawsuits that are doing nothing but hurting the integrity of our elections moving forward? And so he can give all of these, you know, whatever he is saying. I don't even know what he's saying because he hasn't even contacted us to actually have a conversation as far as where we are in this process. But at the end of the day, we're doing what we can do. It is about this frivolous lawsuit. And if he thinks that we need to do more, then he needs to join the court case in actually getting these things thrown out.
And what are they... What would need to happen for it to get thrown out as far as where it is in the court system right now?
From what I've heard, Kristen, is that, you know, they've had many different hearings, but the guy who is who has filed these frivolous lawsuits, if I'm not mistaken, he's changed lawyers each and every single time. So it's been delaying and delaying and delaying the court process.
Got it.
And so that's where we are right now. And so we just basically need to find a resolution so we can figure out how we can move forward. But again, protects people's right to privacy when it comes down to their ballot.
Is this one of the last counties? I mean, obviously we know what's happening in Georgia.
Yeah.
But is there, how many different counties is this still being an issue? Like the relitigation of 2020?
I know three counties, if I'm not mistaken. I think there's one other county other than us in Fulton County that has been had conversations around. But I think that's about it as far as right now. But again, you know, let's move forward. Right. How do we focus on making life more affordable? How do we focus on bringing housing on board? How do we focus on strengthening our public schools and getting out of this, you know, this war that we're in so we can have gas prices go down versus trying to go back in time and relitigate, you know, the 2020 election where every single court in the state of Wisconsin and across this country basically said Donald Trump lost.
All right. So speaking of finances, when we come back, let's talk about Milwaukee County finances, which looks a little bleak. So let's talk about some innovative solutions to get us whole. So he is Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. I am Kristen Bry, and this is Point Taken.
Accunet Mortgage is an equal housing lender, NMLS ID 255368.
This is Brian Wickard here with my son David, Accunet's president and chief metaphor officer. What do you have for us this time?
Dad, for a lot of sellers, selling their home is like handing over a family photo album. Every room in that house has a birthday memory or a trombone.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry here with Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. And we have some a five-year fiscal forecast report for the county. And, you know, I don't think it's a secret that the city, I mean, cities everywhere. I think local municipalities and counties across the state are struggling with budgets,
absolutely.
Right? Like, this is not a unique to Milwaukee thing, but we are the biggest county. We are the biggest city, and which comes with bigger budgets and bigger problems and sometimes bigger shortfalls. And so the five-year outlook does not look great.
Yeah.
I won't bore people with the numbers because if you're anything like me, sometimes you hear numbers and they go in one ear out the other. But I will say by 2031, the deficit is on track to balloon to $168 million. Yeah. So this sounds bad. This is, you know, this is your terrain as far as your current job, even though we know you're running for governor. And so what are we looking at? What are options? Because there's obviously we either have to cut stuff and or raise revenue. And so let's start at least with the innovative ideas for raising revenue, given the restrictions we have that the state puts on counties' ability to do that.
I mean, that's what this really boils down to, is that the state of Wisconsin is really handcuffed. You know, municipalities, cities, towns, villages, counties, to where they can't raise their own revenues nor actually invest in the programs and services they're mandated to invest in. And so here in Milwaukee County, what's extremely unique for just us is that 74% of all the property tax levy that we take in from property tax owners in Milwaukee County are going to state mandated services. So
for
so for every dollar that we bring in, 74 cents from those property taxes are paying for public safety. So that's related to the jail, that's related to the sheriffs, that's related to some of the highway patrol. Even though we got some reimbursements for that, it's not the total cost. But also our state mandated services. We're the only county in the entire state that has a community reintegration center, right? Which is basically our misdemeanor prison in a sense. And so that's $50 million plus alone, you know. And then when you take into account our non-mandated services, which is our most used amenities, right? That's our parks, right? Mm-hmm. That's many of our mental health services that we provide. That is, you know, our Milwaukee County transit system. And so we have put in place, and we've been able to work with the state legislature in a bipartisan fashion to bring, you know, revenue generating tools back down. But now as we move forward, you know, July, we're going to see a lot of the departments or requests as it relates to the budget. And we know as we move forward, we got to look at, one, are there redundancy in many of the programs and services that we provide? How could we create more efficiencies? But we have to get creative as far as the revenues that we're bringing in. Many folks may not know that we don't have a lot of tools in the toolbox other than the vehicle registration fee as a county. And nobody wants to see that go up. But we, is this going to require stronger partnerships at the state level, stronger partnerships at the federal level to make sure that we can continue to provide the services? What I would like to see ideally is that we have a 50-50 split when it comes down to state mandated services so we can continue to invest in the programs and services that so many people rely on.
So when you say a 50-50 split, you mean with the state?
Oh, absolutely.
So that's the money that would be coming back from a state budget as
Correct.
Far as, so, I mean, cause that I think is, like I said, this is not unique to Milwaukee as far as how many different counties, how many different cities are saying, even with a new shared revenue deal, it is not enough.
It is absolutely not enough. And again, people need to understand, it's not just a Milwaukee problem, right? The reason why it's a bigger deficit for Milwaukee County is because we are the largest, most populated county with the more challenges than any other county. And so when you see that big budget, just imagine if we have a code, that means many of these smaller communities probably have the flu because they're not getting enough revenues to actually keep up.
And so ultimately, I mean, like you said, there is creative ways, there's finding ways to cut costs, there's maybe public-private partnerships or whatever.
Absolutely.
There's a bunch of different things that we think about. But is it always going to be a Band-Aid until there's a renegotiation at the state level of how state income taxes get allocated to across the state?
I mean, let's face it. The shared revenue formula that we have, which is 100-plus years old, is antiquated, mm-hmm. right? I don't know any person or any business that's been able to do the exact same thing for 100-plus years and continue to be successful without pivoting. And so we as a state, we need to pivot. And so this means that we have to take a hard look at revenues, how we spend money, but also let's take a look at what other states are doing. How can we adopt that here? And let's have an open and transparent discussion with the public and making sure that we're rowing in the right direction. So we really need a true fix at the state level, but that takes political will of legislators and the next governor.
So you were in the assembly before you had this job, and yeah. I think your reputation is there's a lot of Republicans who like you, and that you're also just a likable guy. But as far as in the relationships that you have with Republicans in the legislature, what pushback, what is their holdout of holding on to this system as the shared revenue? Knowing that like some of it was changed with the last deal, but as far as, because it's not a partisan issue. Like there was Republican county executives, there was Republican mayors also saying the same thing. And so what is the argument to keep it as it is?
There is no argument to keep it as it is. It's just easy to keep it as it is. I don't think that people are willing to do the hard work in the legislature. And granted, we got an election coming up right now. And I think there's going to be a lot of new faces on both sides of the aisle. And we just need to make sure that we're electing individuals who are coming with the political will to actually solve the problem, because we can't continue to put Band-Aids over broken limbs in the state.
Do you think does it surprise you that it's not more of a front and center campaign issue as far as the potential for, if like we keep talking about a potential trifecta for Democrats, that is not, because I feel like we talk about it, but I don't feel like it's talked about as much as a real bipartisan way to campaign of what that would benefit everyone across the state. Does that surprise you that people don't talk about it more on the campaign trail?
Whether for governor
or down ballot?
Well, honestly, I think people don't talk about it as much because I'm the one who understands it more than anyone and actually have fixed these types of problems and been in the thick of these things. And so that will really show how the strength, you know, of my candidacy, because I'm the only executive in this race. I spent 7 years in the state capitol, so I know exactly how Madison works. And so for me, when I think about those experiences and putting them together, this is about how we can form like Voltron in the state legislature and really get things done. And so, but let's also be clear that there's a lot of distractions happening in the world right now. Right.
You think?
And so it is hard for people to be focusing on what is happening with their local unit of government when they're steady going to the gas pump and seeing those gas prices rising. They're going to the grocery store and seeing those groceries prices rising. They're opening up, you know, their utility bills and seeing the energy costs rising. And so those are the immediate needs that's on people's minds. But if you don't have a level of government that can provide public safety, that can provide the public infrastructure, the public health, or invest in housing and mental health, everything starts to crumble. And so for me, I'm looking at the health of our entire state. And health isn't just mental and physical. It's money in your pocket. It's all these different things.
Absolutely. All right. Let's go. Let's take a break. We'll come back and quickly say goodbye with Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. This is Point Taken. Sure. All right. We're already over time, but I will ask one more question since we mostly talked about the county. Are you looking forward to the Wisconsin Democratic Convention this weekend?
Oh, I absolutely am looking forward to the Democratic Convention. It's always a good time, you know, and it's really a good time for us to rally up the troops, really focus on what our campaigns are going to be focusing on. And, you know, I can't wait to give my speech on Sunday evening or Sunday afternoon.
I can't wait to hear a recording of it because I will be celebrating my birthday this weekend with friends.
Oh, happy
so I will
birthday.
Not be there. Thank you. All right. Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, thank you for spending time with us. This has been Point Taken. We will see you back on Monday. News is next.